Hello out there, KKFI listeners. This is Una here, sitting in for Every Woman, while Fiona is off at a conference on the East Coast. I have Kate Redman here with me behind the board, keeping everything running. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm doing okay.
Good. I believe that you've just signed off on your last official bit of training that you need to be a full-fledged operator, haven't you?
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your help with that today.
Well, it was a pleasure to help you, and we are really big about that at KKFI, training volunteers out there. If you want to host a show or you want to try to run the whole ball of wax, so to speak, we train you for free. You just need to bring your energy and a passion for helping the community. And passion is one of the things that drives the person we're interviewing today. We're interviewing Laser from the Double Clicks, one of the duo of Laser and their sister Aubrey, who make up the band. We had the two of them on the show last October while Fiona was at another conference, it turns out. And Laser has since started their own solo effort, and they're going to be on tour soon. We're going to talk to them about you know, what the plans are, what they're doing right now, the success of doing the actual stage production of their musical Teaching a Robot to Love. And Laser surprised us by doing two live performances of songs on the show. So that's coming up here. We pre-recorded it just 2 days ago, so it's still hot and fresh. Stay tuned and enjoy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. We are delighted to be able to welcome a returning guest. We have Laser from the Double Clicks. Last October, we got the chance to talk to them. My wonderful wife, Una, got to chat with the Double Clicks while she was at Anime Weekend Atlanta.
I've always admired their work from afar. I never thought I would get the chance to actually sit and talk with them and learn about their creative process, their endeavors, and to just, you know, talk face to face.
Oh, gosh, am I allowed to talk yet? That's so nice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sorry.
No point in having a guest and not letting them talk.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh. I had a great time last time. I'm so happy to be back. Thanks for having me. I know we were talking about Teaching a Robot to Love, the album, and we finally got to put that up on stage 2 months ago, last month. Yeah, I guess last month, which was amazing. We had a really fun time with putting up this like very queer musical with costumes and choreography and everything that we just is nothing unlike anything I've ever done before. So we had a really good time with that.
Yeah, I did get the online ticket and have watched that, and I love that musical. I got it originally through Amazon, but I got it from your website too. So I had the little talk through, read through piece as well.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. It was a lot of fun to make.
Can you just give our listeners a quick overview of the musical in case they didn't hear the previous interview?
Sure. Teaching a Robot to Love is a queer retelling of Frankenstein. It's about a girl who thinks that she knows everything about humanity and creates a robot and tries to teach it how to be a person, and then learns that she has a lot to learn about humanity. And the robot is once to be different than the way they were born. And it's a story about queer friendship and change and cheese and hedgehogs and all that. And if it is, we filmed the live show, which was really fun. And we're hoping to produce it more places as well. So
I could totally see it becoming a cult classic the way that, I hate to mention it, but Rocky Horror has.
Sure, sure.
It had people throwing slices of cheddar in the air.
I'm down.
Instead.
It sounds fun to me.
I have to say, when I hit the cheddar song, and I was like, it's cheese. And I do love cheddar, and actually cheese with decent strong flavor instead of some of the bland plasticky stuff that you get from corporate America.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine. I love a good cheese. I love a good flavor. I think we all know that we all get better with age, as just like cheese does. So
yes,
the message of the musical.
I'd like to know a little bit more about it, a bit more about how difficult it was to set up, especially dealing with the time of COVID, and how much fun you had.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I brought, I was, I had kind of a difficult beginning of the year going through a divorce and stuff like that. It's been an exciting one. But I knew that if we wanted to put the show up, I had to get together a really great team. Was the message that I got from my mentors. It's just like, well, find somebody else who can make this happen. So we brought in some producers, and a director who was able to really get an incredible show together. We have, we brought in some costumers as well, because we put the show up at a fringe festival, Hollywood Fringe, which means you have 15 minutes load in and out. You have absolutely no time for sets. You have no time for, you know, props or costume changes or anything. So we thought, well, what we'll do is we'll have really awesome costumes that we can just have one costume for the whole show, and it'll be kind of cartoony and fun. And that's what we ended up with, was this show that's fully choreographed. It's 2 hours long, and the costumes are just amazing. This kind of retro futuristic queer world that we were able to create. And yeah, we were very fortunate that we didn't get shut down by COVID. A lot of people in the festival did, but we were very, very, very careful. We put up 5 shows. They were all sold out here in LA. And then we also streamed everything because we knew a lot of people from who weren't in LA, or people who were in LA but aren't currently going to events, wanted to see the show. So there was a 3-camera shoot of the show, and which people can still check out at thedoubleclicks.com, just to watch on demand, that we were really excited to be able to share it with everybody. Because I think that there's a lot of, especially in musical theater, it can kind of be a class thing where if you can't make it to Broadway, if you can't make it to where this show is happening, you don't actually get to see the show. And we just wanted it accessible to anybody who wanted to see it. Which is what we ended up being able to do, which was very fun.
So if anyone anywhere was listening to this and wanted to put on queer musical theater, how would they license that from you or get in touch with you?
Yeah, there's info on teachingarobottolove.com about that. We're putting together the licensable script and music right now, because there are a few different queer theaters around the country who are interested, which makes me so happy. I just, you know, I want as many people to see it and to dance around as a robot and a scientist. As you know, I think it's really fun. It's a really fun show, and I really enjoyed watching it because I wasn't in it. I just showed up for a rehearsal, went on tour for a week, came back, saw more happening, and it's just my favorite thing I've ever done, is just to be able to see art that I wrote the words to and some of the music, and then see it elevated a millionfold because of these people who are so talented as directors and actors. And it was just a wild and wonderful experience. So I hope more people do that, just selfishly.
It must be quite a weird feeling, though, seeing someone else take your ideas and your vision and twist it and reform it to get it to appear on stage to their vision, because they're the professional and know how to direct things and what tends to look good to the audience.
Yeah. I mean, I was very lucky that I assembled the team myself. So I knew that they wouldn't try to take the queer stuff out of it. And they would, you know, I was involved in all the casting and all of that. So I think it is hard. You know, I live in Hollywood, and I have a lot of friends who make stuff. And once it's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. And sometimes you're just like, okay, I guess that's what it ended up as. It's not what I meant. But I was very lucky that this show turned out to be exactly what I wanted, and even more things that I couldn't even imagine. But it is wild to spend a lot of time writing something and know, like, every sentence somebody else, like, you know, 12 other people are going to have to deal with this one line I wrote. So it better be good, you know. It's different than just writing songs for myself, where I don't have to, where it's just ever going to be me trying to say these words.
Yeah, that must be amazing and terrifying at the same time. And I can't imagine how they could take the queer stuff out and actually have everything left of the show, because
it's fair.
Almost like there'd be a tiny bit of anti-corporate stuff left in it, and it might be like a musical version of Snowpiercer or something, and that would be it.
And why shouldn't we have a musical version of Snowpiercer?
Yes, but queer it.
Queer it right up. I agree.
It's difficult for me to listen to some of the songs from Teaching a Robot to Love, because they're so powerful, because they impact me so strongly, and that's good, but it can be a little bit, because it's so touching, especially Normal Human Party, which really plays into my sense of alienation and how I feel like I really just don't belong. How do you just be a everyday average person? How do you fit in? How do you do what you're supposed to do or what you're expected to do and not keep making mistakes no matter how hard you try? And that's a theme in any media that really touches my heart directly. So, you know, some things are just so good, they're painful to listen to, yet because they're so good, you have to listen to them.
Yes, and I feel the same about the why aren't you happy? The robots get to themselves and have their proper body and be them, but then the people around them aren't happy because they have these ideas of them that straitjacket them and they want them to fit into those ideas instead of being them and just being happy for them being happy and comfortable in their own body.
Yeah, I agree. It was actually funny to me that I was so emotional listening to those being performed by other people, you know, songs that I wrote about very much about my own experience of my own life. You know, the show can pretend like it's a sci-fi musical all at once, but that's not what it's about, you know. And it is a very emotional to watch. We cast an incredible trans actor to play the robot, and hearing them do that song and, you know, imagining the experiences that we all go through, it's really fun, and I'm really glad that y'all get that. I know that you are very smart folks, and it's fun to talk to people who understand what we're trying to do.
We've had our own issues with gender identity and with society expecting certain things, and I also run a support group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender and non-binary people. So I get to see a lot of people going through pain and not being happy and not realizing, and help them through that and help them to support their loved ones.
Thinking about the overarching theme too, it's, you know, there's also a, do you have to actually change anything in yourself? Do you, everybody has to make their own decision how they want to appear, how they want, need to, or should fit in, or do they need to fit in at all? And some people feel that way. You know, maybe I can just be me and not have to worry about changing. But at the same time, I feel it's what I need to do. So it's conflicting, you know.
You're absolutely right. Like, it's, there's no other person gets to define what makes us who we want to be and what gender or what world that we want to be perceived in. But it's also about being comfortable with yourself. So I'm very familiar with that feeling.
And non-binary is even weirder because... You could feel one way one day and one way another, and you don't even know what to change to or how to, or if anything can really represent that. It's our brains are just weird and magical and terrifying all at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun. It's a world. But I think, I mean, ultimately, I think I'm so thankful to be a trans person. I'm so thankful to have the community that I have, and like, I think it's truly like at least for me, like a gift of being able to see beyond what society tells us that we need to do, you know, and in so many ways beyond just gender, but like, just like you were told that this is the prescription of being a person, and you really have to realize like you don't, that's not right. You can do whatever you want. It's kind of wonderful.
The stage production is awesome. And if you want to talk any more about that, we totally can. If there's anything that you would like to cover more about the musical, see you all again for if anyone wants to find out about licensing it to perform it themselves.
Sure. All that information is going to be at teachingarobottolove.com, which is fortunately a fortunate URL for us. But yeah, if anybody wants to watch it or just learn more, there's lots of videos online. And we're very thankful that the community exists and is supportive. That's one of the best things, I think, about creating art in the age of the internet, is that you can find an awesome community for it. People can check out teachingarobottolove.com if they would like.
I know that you funded that originally by a GoFundMe type campaign. Mm-hmm. And... I know that you've currently got a Kickstarter going on for your next big adventure. Can you tell us what you've been doing since Teaching a Robot to Love went live and where you're going now and all the details?
Yeah, so this is a very exciting year. I am about to go into the studio in just a couple days to record my first solo album. So the Double Clicks are still going strong. We're making amazing stuff, but Aubrey's taking a little bit of time off from performing. So I've been writing some very queer, emotional, angry music that I'm very proud of. It is on Kickstarter now, and it'll be out over the next, the final EP will be out in the spring. Right now it's just called Laser, which is my name, but it's there's songs about cancel culture and how that's not a real thing and how we should hold people responsible for harming folks. And there's songs about tea for tea love, and there's some cool angry divorce music in there, and it's all music I'm really, really proud of, and I'm very excited to be recording with a live band and going up to Portland to make this happen with some of the folks from who've worked with the Mountain Goats and Modest Mouse and some of my favorite musicians, so I'm very hyped about it.
You know, introduced me to Modest Mouse a while ago.
Oh, nice.
Because my nickname is Mouse.
There you go.
We have to listen to Mouse music. So that is awesome that you're getting to perform with musicians like that that you respect and know so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel very lucky about it. I have wanted to make music like this for a long time, and I think, I mean, with the fact that I have got a full musical produced, and now I get to make like this indie pop, folk rock record that I'm very excited about, is I feel very lucky that I'm being able to do this, and a lot of it is thanks to crowdfunding, which is a thing I'm very passionate about, obviously. I'm thankful for the audience that I have that it says, okay, yeah, you go make a weird thing, and it's okay that you can't get it funded by a record label or a producer or something. You just do whatever, and we'll give you the money for it. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I so love that about the internet. You can find amazing, cool people and people that are interested in the things that you are. Mm-hmm. And before, you might have been the only person in your town, or even if you went, you had no way of finding out that anyone else like that existed.
Yeah.
No longer living alone under a rock.
Yeah, it's very, it's a wonderful feeling to be able to make stuff with and for people. So I'm excited.
Some performers have said that it's both liberating and scary to make their first solo effort when they've been in a group, a duet, mm-hmm. or with other performers, because they feel like they have more creative freedom, but they also feel like they're sort of on their own a little bit. And there's also a concern that it may drive a wedge between them mm-hmm. and the people they worked with in the past. Do you have any worries or concerns?
I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure on it. I think the one thing that I'm thankful for is that I'm going in with a group of collaborators, session musicians, to work on these songs about. I really don't know what it's going to be like, but I'm excited. Like, we basically just kind of have been setting the dates, and the dates approach. I know Aubrey's really happy for me. I'm not really worried about that. My sister, who I usually make music with, has always been very supportive of anything I've wanted to do, because she's the best. I think I'm excited to try a new thing. I am a little bit worried because I have no idea what's going to happen. But at this point, the dates are on the calendar, so you gotta be like ready to rock, I guess.
Well, you've done some solo stuff yourself already this year because you toured earlier in the year.
Yes, I've been touring. And like I said, Aubrey's not touring anymore. So I went to the UK, I went to the East Coast, I'm about to go to the Pacific Northwest, doing solo shows, which has been very fun and a very, not a very different experience, but a slightly different experience. And the anxieties are different. And but I think, honestly, I'm just happy that I get to still play music, because I have missed it over the last few years, not being able to tour. So thank goodness I'm playing some outdoor shows and doing stuff that hopefully is as safe as I possibly can be.
Yes, and I believe any information about upcoming dates should be on thedoubleclicks.com. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And we have to find a way to make Kansas City lucrative enough for you to come out here and do a show here so you can come see.
I love Kansas City. Danielle Ate the Sandwich is out there, and I'd love to play with her, so we'll make it happen.
Awesome.
There's good tattoo artists out there too that I want to visit. So
yes, I have several friends who have spent many hours worshiping at the temple of the local tattoo artist.
I love art on
in all forms, but I love art that people choose to put on their bodies to express themselves. But I get an analysis paralysis. I never know what I want to do. So instead, I just poke holes in all sorts of parts of my body. So,
I mean, that's an option too. It's great. It's all decoration.
It's art in a way.
Absolutely.
If you make enough holes to make some sort of braille message out of it, you can both aspects.
There you go.
Sometimes there's a lot of pain. It becomes the art of noise, to make a pun.
I know I didn't offer those until the end of the interview last time, but if y'all would like any songs, I have songs from the new record that I could play live for you now, or I could do a song from the musical also, because I have my instruments right next to me.
Yes, serious. We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
Great. Well, I mean, this is reminding me of a song from my new album that I would love to play. This conversation we're having, and this is a song about finding the person and finding the relationship that makes you feel like yourself. And it's kind of a gender euphoria love song, if that makes sense. And it is called "The Way That You Look at Me." It's a collared shirt. It's some terrible shorts that don't really fit. It's learning how to flirt. It's having short hair and no clue what to do with it. It's the art on my skin. It's a stupid red tie that I got from the trash. It is not squeezing in. It's a pair of black socks that don't even match. It's the way that you look at me. It's the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you look at me. It's the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you look at me. It's the way that you let me look at you. It's my hand on your waist, begging your body to please never leave me. The look on your face, and for the first time not minding if someone perceives me. It's the way that you look at me. It's the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you look at me. It's the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you make me feel tiny and strong, like I'm almost the man that I've been all along. It's the way that your heels say the same thing your eyes do too. And I know I'd be lost if I didn't have you. And it has been years since I've wanted to pray, but I have to give thanks to someone to say, what a waste of my life till I caught you today. Isn't that just the way? It's the way that you look at me, and the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you look at me, and the way that you let me look at you. It's the way that you look at me, and the way that you let me look at you.
The lyrics are very powerful. I wonder sometimes, is there a specific instance, a specific moment in time, or an overall general idea that forms the foundation of your music?
Ooh, like this specific song?
I've had people tell me that, you know, sometimes they create a song because they're sitting at a cafe and they just looked at a scene that was occurring out the window, yeah, and that inspires them. And other people, it's just giving manifestation to a general feeling that they've had for a while. I was wondering, do you use a mix of those, or is it something even different?
Sure. I mean, this song, I'll be honest, is just a song about, it's a song about my girlfriend. And I'm in my first ever T for T relationship right now. I've dated trans folks before, but it is an amazing relationship, and there are just moments where I find myself in this like gross saccharine beautiful world where I can just stare at somebody and know that I feel like they see who I actually want to be. And this kind of unspoken understanding that I don't feel like I could have with anybody else. It's beautiful. It really is. I can't, like, I don't want to undercut it, but I do also want to make it, because I always just want to tell jokes, but, like, honestly, I've never been happier, and it's just being able to find the person who wants to reinforce that instead of undercut it, which, if you're, you know, read a lot into the musical, you know that I've been in relationships before that have not been so affirming, and it's a really wonderful place to be. I'm thankful that I can express it through music.
That's amazing. We're so happy for you.
Thank you very much.
Especially with the line in there about learning how to flirt, because I so often hear from people in the community that they are oblivious when someone is flirting with them, or that they don't know how to flirt. Their idea of flirting with someone is going up and saying, "So, I read this book once."
A song that I should release really soon is a song called "Is This a Date" that I wrote with my friend Emily Henry, which I call our bisexual dating song, which is just about going on dates with women and not knowing if either of you are flirting with the person. And I think that was the foundation of me going into the next step of my life and just being like, you know what, I'm just gonna just say I'm flirting with people now. Like, I feel like at this point I've been on so many dates that I didn't know whether they were dates, and I'm so freaking tired of it.
Maybe
at a certain point.
Maybe we need a shirt or something that we can have a t-shirt on underneath, that overshirt, and when you're flirting, you pull back it like Superman. And
yes.
It says, "I'm flirting now."
Yeah, I'm doing it. I like you in a flirting way, if you're into it. If not, it's okay.
When I transitioned and came out at work and my hair started to grow out, because I really didn't have long hair before, I used to play with it. You know,
oh, just sure.
And there was a time when my secretary, who was like a second mom to me and really supported me 150%, saw me talking to another senior manager, and I was playing with my hair, standing there looking at him. Yeah. And when he left, she came running around desk and said, "Why were you flirting with that man, Missy?" And I said, what do you mean flirting? "You were playing with your hair and looking at him." I said, "Yeah, just fidgeting." And she said, "Come with me. I'm going to teach you something."
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah.
People play with the hair because it's a fidget tool, and if you've been brought up female and you're fierce back, it's a socially acceptable fidget and doesn't get you into trouble like all of the other ADHD mechanisms.
I haven't washed my hair for 4 days fidget right now. No.
It's a big mood. It's a big mood.
Well, it helps preserve your hair if you've got long hair and don't want to blast it with the blow dryer.
What message do you really want to get out? Is it a variety of messages, or is it really, are your songs focused about expressing your feelings or trying to reach out and help other people understand their feelings or find a pathway to know more about their feelings?
That's a really good question, because that's something that I do think about. I want the songs that I write to make the world a better place and not a worse one. So that's one of the big moods. But also, I think I write songs that are very specific to me and to my life. And I find that the more specific I make them, and the more I think, well, this is just a song about me, the more people are able to relate to it, right? Because people have those specifics. And when you express something that's really honest, then the emotion comes through, even if the details are different, you know? So this record has some sad songs about, you know, realizing that you have to prioritize your ethics in your life over a relationship. And it has songs about dealing with the patriarchy and garbage like that. And one of them, I would say, is kind of persuasive essay about that. But for the most part, I think it's just I've had a lot of strong feelings, and I like setting them to music because I think that I have found that the more emotional and specific I am, the more surprisingly relatable it is.
I wanted to ask you along those lines, what do you think is the greatest need right now in the queer communities? What do you think people could do better by any means to help support the queer communities?
Oh, that's a very good question, because I mean, I think the world is a trash fire, and I'm kind of an anarchist. So at this point I'm like, stop telling me to vote, because I did, and you're in charge, and come on, like, let's do something. But I think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in people realizing that they need to have more empathy for folks different than them. And that keeps being true. Like, even if you are a feminist who doesn't understand transness, or if you're a trans person who needs to have more sympathy for people of different classes and races and all of this stuff, like, we all are in this together. And ultimately, I think the more that we process our own trauma, the more we're able to realize how much we can do to help others. And I think if there are folks out there who are fortunate enough to have resources to share, I mean, like, at a certain point, I'm here for, let's just help people one-on-one. Let's mutual aid. Let's donate to a gosh darn GoFundMe so somebody has the confirmation surgery they need. Like, let's be the people that we each other need, because systemic change is just not happening, and it feels like a nightmare to be alive. The thing that we can do is love each other, I think, and help each other love even more. As much of a hippie as that makes me sound.
People could have more empathy towards themselves too, but that's very difficult to do, especially when we're beset on all sides by a world that still only just grudgingly allows us to exist. Yeah. And even when you have privilege, when you've have a family that supports you, a good job, when everything seems to be going well, if you can't support and love yourself and have empathy for yourself, then you're still building your house on sand, so to speak.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is a conversation I have with a lot of my, especially trans friends, is like, are you saying things to yourself that you wouldn't ever say to another person? And we frequently are. I mean, as, you know, just saying things like about how you're allowed to take up space and whether you're allowed to, you know, do the things that you need to do to be a full person in your own perception, you know, like, hey, you're not wrong. You're beautiful, and you are allowed to take care of yourself, and you would say that to anyone else. I think we're at this point where you really have to water your own garden. And I hope that people know that existing and being happy is a radical act in a post-apocalyptic America.
And that turning the news off and taking some space that you're not totally inundated by outside judgments and the tire fire all the time.
Absolutely.
Isn't an act of evil. It doesn't make you a slacker. It just means you're taking a little bit of space for your own mental health and well-being.
Absolutely. You know, I frequently, you know, just try to remember that, like, any goal I have is going to take me more than one day, and I have to just sit down and do that thing. And getting infuriated at the same stupid politicians doing the same stupid stuff over and over again doesn't help me reach any of my goals. And I can't help the world unless I reach them. So, sorry, the news.
I'd like to know a little bit
about the fans that you have, the response that you have from your fans and the fan base. Do you receive quite a bit of, I would imagine you receive quite a bit of heartfelt emails and communications because of the way that your music is written, solo or as a group, and with how directly it touches and addresses our community. I would imagine, not to bring up another group when talking to you, but Steam Powered Giraffe has an incredible queer fan base that is really vehemently behind them. I wondered if you were getting a lot of really positive comments or touching comments from people.
I love Steam Powered Giraffe, and I saw them. I didn't know anything about them, but I saw them for the first time, I think, right after Bunny came out. And it was an incredible experience to see that and see how excited everybody was to, you know, to see somebody living their truth. I mean, anybody good loves to see somebody be happy, I think. I'm very lucky. I mean, one of my favorite things is getting emails and people telling me, like, that they've come out. And I get that a lot, like trans folks coming out for the first time to me or coming out to their family and letting me know. I have a few friends who have started as fans who give me updates on, you know, today I painted my nails for the first time. Today I got a compliment at Walmart for the first time on my dress. And, like, it's just like, it makes me so happy. It makes me believe in the world being a good place. And we had an incredible trans woman come all the way from Kentucky to Los Angeles to see our musical. And like, it just makes me feel like my goal is to uplift folks who are getting constant negative messages. And if I can do that a little bit, I would feel like I'm doing something on earth.
You absolutely do. I have a young female engineer at work who, I mean, just barely a year out of college, who I hired, who was talking about the negativity that she had faced going into engineering and even after graduating successfully, doing rather well in school, getting hired at a good job and doing fantastically. I mean, I got her an early promotion even because she's just so awesome that she talked to me at heartfelt about how many people had told her she couldn't do math. She couldn't do science. She should focus on something easier. And I played the song with the double clicks, you know, Women Know Math. And it just really incredibly touched her. I think there's a very, that in the STEM field, really, some of your songs really transcend outside of the queer or LGBTQIA plus experience. There's so much intersectionality in your music that it really makes it, it really makes the entire message and the music much richer. And I want to congratulate you on how you've been able to do that. And it doesn't even really have to do with Women Know Math. It has to do with anyone who has really been oppressed or held back or held down on any subject, that they need to really know that they don't need to listen to that negativity and be strong. And it's a greater message than what it at first appears.
Thank you so much. Yes, I mean, that. I'm very humbled, as last time, for all of your incredible compliments. But yeah, I'm happy to. I think my heroes are people who have said out loud things that I didn't know that I needed to hear, you know, and aren't afraid to express their own insecurities or their own fears of the messages that we hear in the world. And then you hear somebody say out loud the thing that you had internalized, and you're like, oh, wow, actually, that's kind of liberating in a way to remember what rules we live by that we don't need to be living by.
So glad that Una found that song and played it for me, because that was my introduction to the double clicks. And so much of that resonated with me, and why I like the label Fear Spec, because regardless of being gender non-binary, if you were raised female, you've gone through all that oppression and all of the self-guessing and self-doubt from that.
Absolutely. Would you like me to play it? I have it right here.
Yes?
Of course. Okay.
We would love it.
My dress is muddy, my skin is bad, I'll call you buddy, I sort of want to be a dad. And I'm not curvy, and I'm not slim, I don't wear makeup at home, on planes, or at the gym. And I'm not weak, and I'm not strong, I cry often. If you know the words, then sing along. I am a woman. None of these things disqualify me. I hear a lot of voices saying I'm doing it wrong, but please just try me. I like being a lady, and I don't need to be the picture of what someone thinks that means. Though it might help you know just what to do with me. You say in turn that will have me succeed. Who cares? I crush on ladies. I crush on dudes. It is a sex crime to hack someone and share their nudes. Gender's performance. It isn't binary or real. If you don't like that, I do not care, you'll have to deal. You gave us dolls and then you told us they were dumb. You told us we'd get hurt if we had too much fun. You see the problem? Women know math. You can't tell us to do a thing and then when we do it, laugh. always will be boys is a disgrace. And though you tell me things are changing, I am not willing to wait, 'cause it's a problem all around the world. Every day people are punished for just being girls. No fair. I am a woman and I'm doing it right. I am no matter what I do. I have pants and hair and dirt, and I am not here to please you. I have goals and plans and dreams, and I am not here to please you. I have talents, strengths, and words, and I am not here to please you.
I can't even speak.
Well, probably because you were on mute, because we both muted ourselves. So sing along.
Well, yeah, I was singing along, but I can't even speak. No words.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very glad you like that song.
I love that one. It resonates so much.
On such a strong foundation of everything from your early work through your multimedia production of Teaching a Robot to Love. Sorry, I'm a little choked up. I'm stammering. I know your solo work is coming up. Do you have anything else planned as the Double Clicks that you are developing right now?
Oh gosh, what don't we have going on? We've been doing a lot of streams. We're doing a lot of internet stuff as we both are based out of home. I'm about to go see her for a week, so hopefully we'll cook up something fun as well, because I'm staying at her house while I go to a different house or a different studio to record. Yeah, it's an exciting year with a lot of stuff coming up, and I can't believe that we're halfway through already. But I've been streaming every day this week, actually, and Aubrey is always around to party with us, and it's I know that there will be many, many things that we make, and I'm very excited.
If people want to make sure they see notifications for those streams, I believe you have a sign up for regular emails to get announcements. How do people get on that list?
It's thedoubleclicks.com is a great place to go and just sign up for email and find our Twitch and all of the stuff that we're up to. Because there's a lot. It's a lot to keep track of.
Is there a link there to your current Kickstarter?
Yes. There should be.
If they sign up for the emails, there'll be one coming out shortly saying last few days of the Kickstarter.
Get up on here. Yeah. Yes.
What did you want to be when you were a young person? Where did you see your life going? Or did you have, what were your plans and dreams?
Oh, thank you. I've always really wanted to be a writer. That was my main thing. I never wrote anything long. I started lots of stories, lots of short stories about, I think for some reason in the 90s, we were all into writing stories about orphans and dogs. So I wrote a lot of half novels about that kind of stuff. I wanted to be a performer, but I never, the school that I grew up in, it was very competitive. And I came from like the poor side of town where we didn't have enough experience to be in the musicals and that kind of stuff. So I was just like, I kind of gave up on that pretty early and was like, okay, I'm just going to be a writer, and got very into producing things. I would film a lot of little music videos with my friends. I remember very clearly that instead of action, I would say, guys, shut up. Because that was what you need to say when you're producing, you know, four 13-year-old boys trying to do some sort of stupid action movie. But yeah, no, I always wanted to be a writer, and I was a journalist for a while. That was what I did after college, and worked for newspapers and a TV station briefly. And I just love learning and sharing what I've learned. And now I do that through music. I feel like it's been a pretty straight line in a weird way. Very non-linear straight line.
I originally wanted to be a writer when I was girl in high school, and then I went to university and sort of started that path and realized that due to the family poverty, I had to pick something that was going to result in income faster. Yeah. I had to work the whole way through school, and I ended up being an engineer. And then now 28 years
ex post facto. Wow. Yeah. I'm so old. I'm writing fiction and getting paid for it for the first time, writing a monthly column of two women engineers that travel the world solving problems. It's written as a fictional detective story in a large, actually the largest power journal in the world. And I've got so much fan mail from female identifying persons around the world, including some who gave up on science and engineering because of oppression, because people had told them it couldn't be done. And having two women engineers highlighted solving problems, they said, has been inspiring to them. I feel like I finally started to make a difference. It's a little in that specific area anyways.
I love that. Awesome. And I think that's great.
And yours melds fiction and fact, because it's got real scientific problems, but then it captures it in a fictional way to present it. Yeah. I think it's a wonderful cross-genre niche that you found there.
Oh, that sounds delightful. I mean, that's what I find, that it's always easier to teach people lessons if they think that there's something else going on. And it's very, very clever. I love that. I have to say, a lot of my friends who started being writers and never gave up on that are now all trying to get tech jobs. So it's all, you know, the balance. It all figures out.
I wanted to be a vet and also wanted to be a writer. So I think in the 90s, my story that I was working on was a dragon who had accidentally killed a princess's knight who was supposed to be rescuing her. And so the dragon ended up taking the princess around the world and introducing her to all sorts of people to see if she could find another suitable prince. And obviously the princess was obviously going to discover that she didn't need princes anyway, and that she was her own fully realized princessy person, and and she could pick up a sword or whatever the hell she wanted to do.
Love that. That sounds great. I'd read that.
She's written dragon stories for me as well as gifts, stories about the lonely dragon or a dragon that turns into a butterfly. And she writes wonderful stories. So it's good to always try to give some outlet to your creativity, even if you think it's awful, even if you think you can't do anything, just do it and don't judge.
There's something really beautiful and powerful about creativity. And I think, like anything, you know, that there's research that shows, like, the thing that makes humans happy is being able to do something that gives you that, like, flow, that joy, right? And like doing that, you know, a few times a week, and that maybe that's writing a story that no one will ever see. For me, it's like, it's sewing and it's, you know, sitting down and making things rhyme, you know, like that, whatever lights your brain up in that specific way where you just start to lose track of time. That's the secret to happiness. Regardless of whoever appreciates it other than yourself.
Yeah, I've read some of those studies, and one of them was talking about knitting, and that your brain goes into the same flow state when you knit as it does when you meditate. But of course, for so many generations, people have said, oh, well, that's just a women's hobby and it's silly and unimportant, even while they're wearing the clothes that it produces.
So, sure.
Yeah, it's good for your brain, good for your happiness, good for your soul, whatever you want to call it. And you end up with something wearable at the end of it, too.
I've made so many unwearable hats, but I enjoyed doing it. So whatever gets you there.
Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today. It is a delight and an honor to get to talk to you, and especially to get two songs sung, especially for us and our lucky listeners that are going to hear them too. But we get them first and get to see you and your awesome teal hair.
Thank you very much. I do my best.
I was just thinking they were a blue laser.
Sure.
Yes.
I have this really cool blue laser that's so strong it can set wood on fire, which people ask, why do you have something like that? And say, why don't you have something like that?
Why wouldn't you? It sounds like
fun.
I mean, it's a perfect party trick if you want. You can get matches and light them from across the room. If it's someone's birthday or something, you could just set their candle on fire and try not to leave the laser on for too long, or you'll scorch the wallpaper behind
or their drapes or their tablecloth, because after all, a robot doesn't really understand these things.
I love it. In the right hands, what a good power.
Yes. And of course, you might want to burn cities and capitalism down with wonderful death lasers.
I might.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to see you again, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it. Much love to everybody.
Thank you.
Goodbye.